So it's June. The students are gone, but it's still busy in Bloomington. It's not as a quiet town, I feel like, anymore, maybe as a few years ago. It's very busy. I'm with Mayor Hamilton. Thanks so much for having us
again. Joe, good to see you again. Yeah, Bloomington is always busy. There's always something going on.
Yeah. There's so much to get to, and we only have about 15 minutes, so let's just start right away with the update of the convention center. Last we talked about in May that we were going to hear from the architect on a cost proposal and maybe some sort of preliminary designs, but it's June, haven't heard too much yet. So what's the update? What can you tell us?
Well, we did have a meeting of the steering committee, which continues to recommend path forward, which I'm pleased with. And they have recommended a size and a location, I would say. We had good discussions, and the steering committee recommended that the major expansion of the convention center should happen north of the current convention center, on the block north of 3rd, south of 4th, west of College. And that was a recommendation that they've made, and it's exciting location. And they also recommended about a 30,000 square foot expansion, or not bigger than that, let's say. And so those were good steps. I'm a little disappointed. We're still waiting for county collaboration on this. We've got some work to do to get that all figured out, but I'm confident it's going to move forward. It's, again, a really important project for the downtown vitality over the next generations, frankly. So we're excited about the move forward, and summer is going to be a little bit of a break, I think, in that, and then we'll pick back up in the fall, I hope.
So that was the steering committee that you said that met, and when was that?
They met a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
A couple weeks ago.
Rather recently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the county, and there was a Herald Times reported recently that I believe the Memorandum of Understanding agreement is broken. Is it?
No, it's not, but it does need to be edited, I guess, modernized. We've done one big step with it, which was picking the architect, engaging the architect, which are engaged now under contract to do this design. And the next step is kind of from there, the construction, the siting, the hotel selection, and those kinds of issues, which the MOU needs to be updated, and we're waiting for the county to respond with some suggestions about that.
So that's where that sits right now. You feel like no one broke the memorandum right now. It's just a matter of waiting for the county to come back to the table.
Yeah, you know, the MOU has kind of been done in stages, and we've mostly completed the stage that we're in now with the architect selection and the beginning of the design. Though there's a lot of design, the actual design of the building hasn't begun. And that needs to happen, as does the hotel partnership and the specific siting issues and those kinds of things. So the next iteration of the MOU needs to get done.
And when do you expect that to happen and people to come together on
any
that?
Day,
any day.
Any day
now.
Any day.
Any day.
I hope. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You wrote a post on the city's Facebook page. I think just yesterday I saw it on the recent allegations about a vendor at the city's farmer market having white supremacist affiliations, and we can link to that for people who want to see that. And there was a meeting on Monday night too. And your message really was just speaking out against hate and to respond to if people see racism. And of course you said the city will not tolerate hate, which has always been your message. But then also there's not much that the city can do regarding a vendor that might have ties to white supremacy because of the First Amendment. But it seems like people are still upset about that.
Well, of course they're upset. We all should. It's extremely upsetting. You know, this community, like any community in America, has been steeped in racism in our history. I mean, we can't forget that this city, like any city in America, has deep roots in the racism that was part of our country that we have to recognize and deal with. It breaks my heart as a mayor when that kind of white supremacist racism arises. It is around us. There are people who have very, from my perspective, odious, hateful ideologies and beliefs, and we have made a lot of progress in this community and in this country, but we're not where we need to be. And so anytime that this kind of deep racism arises, we have to call it out. We have to call it evil and wrong and un-American and unpatriotic and un-Bloomington. And that's what I have done, and I know many other people do that. In the context, however, as a government, I also have to recognize we are a constitutional democracy, and the Constitution is very careful for very good reasons, to stop government from telling people what to think. Government doesn't get to tell any of us what to think. Government can tell us how to act. We can set rules in many ways, but we cannot tell people, you have to believe this or you can't believe that, except for very rare circumstances. And so in the particular circumstance where we have a vendor in our city farmer's market, we have to be very scrupulous and careful attending to our obligation as a government to respect the right of people to believe different things. I can hate what they believe. Many of us can hate and do hate these ideologies, but we have to be very thoughtful and careful that we don't become the thought police. And so, it's a hard thing for a community, and I absolutely empathize with people who want to just rip this root and branch out of our community. We have to do it legally and in the right way, but I will say this, it is always appropriate for people to respond to hate with love and with other speech, and to respond to bad speech or bad views with positive views and positive speech. And individuals and organizations in our community are doing that, and that's a good thing.
What I'm getting from some of the reporting we've done, though, is that the city's hands are tied on this. But because you don't want to push this any further, but some are saying, well, but the city gets sued all the time, and the city's getting sued over annexation, so why not take it to...
Well, I'm not afraid of being sued if we think we're right. I think it is my obligation as a public official to try to follow the law if the law is a valid law, and the Constitution is a valid law. Now, I would not say that we are looking at options. This is a complicated area of law. It's right in between some very difficult things. We care deeply that our farmers market is open, welcoming to all, and it must appear that way to all. And it is very important to the community and to the city that we have a market that is that way. There are restrictions. We can't evaluate every vendor's thoughts and say, are your thoughts consistent with our community's thoughts? We can evaluate actions, and those actions, the difference between one person's action is another person's post on a website and speech, and so we're looking at that. It's complicated. I appreciate people's passion about this issue. It is good to be passionate about anti-white supremacy. White supremacy is an evil ideology that we need to stamp out as much as we possibly can, and to educate people about that, and that's a good thing we'll keep working on.
So I see there's a new ambassador type position that begins July 1st. The local paper called it a nightmare, but I'm not sure if that's the proper term for what this is. Can you kind of walk us through what this new position is and the title?
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting. We're kind of adding a fourth position now. We've added a social worker at the police department. We added two neighborhood resource specialists at the police department who are kind of connecting us more with neighborhoods. And this fourth position is called an after-hours ambassador, as we call it. It really came out of the Safe Civil and Just Society, Safe Civil and Just Committee, that was looking at how do we create a better community, a stronger community. And one of the issues was, well, look, most of City Hall closes at 5, and yet a lot of Bloomington is very active after hours. And we looked around the world, frankly, and the country, and said there are places that have a kind of a city ambassador whose job starts at 5 o'clock. Runs into the evening and is there to help interact with institutions or people who are in our community. It could be a bar, it could be a play, a musical event, it could be individuals who are here. And this person, this after-hours ambassador, is kind of the City Hall representative for them when City Hall is closed. And we're going to see how it goes. We're very excited about it. And this person has signed on to night hours, so they're ready for that, and we'll see how it goes.
And you keep saying this person, when will that person be announced and all the details about that?
I think we're announcing it any day now. The person is ready to start July 1. They just haven't signed every form and ready to make the public announcement, but we'll be announcing that very soon.
So you named a few positions that have been created as well as this one as well. Where does all of those funds come from, and where's the city getting the money to pay for all these new employees?
Well, the city of Bloomington continues to grow. We're growing by 1,000 people every year or so, and that means the needs and demands of our community grow. We add police officers, we add fire officials, we add parks rec people. We're adding a new park. We continue to grow, so the city government grows as well. Sometimes we're able to reduce need for people. For example, in sanitation trucks are automated. That's going to change that need. We're going to do automated meter reading for the water department. That's going to change some of the needs for those employees. But we're evolving in this way. And these are all positions that I think really help, in my view, open up the doors of City Hall to connect more and more between city government and our community, from neighborhood resource specialists who are doing that particularly for the police department, to the after hours ambassador who's doing it kind of on behalf of the whole City Hall.
You talked about the committee that helped define what was needed. What are there specific incidents that this is helping? In other words, what precipitated the need for the evening ambassador?
Yeah, I think, again, it did come out of that Safe Civil Just Task Force recommendation that there a lot of the people who deal with some of the stress in the community, that can happen between 5 p.m. and 3 a.m., let's say. There's a lot of people out and about. There's a lot of people in the streets. There's people in the alleyways. There's activities going on. And if City Hall is not open at those times to get a phone call, other than emergency calls, of course, this ambassador was a recommendation from those people, institution owners or arts folks or tourism people who said, you know, having a voice and a person who we can relate to right now when we have an issue. If Kirkwood needs cleaning up at 8 p.m., our public works people aren't on the job. They're at 7 a.m. But if there's an activity going on that's causing some disruption or stress, or rather than just call the police, this is a person who can step in and try to help with that.
4th Street Parking Garage moving forward. Redevelopment Commission last night, they're the funding entity for this project, saw or reviewed the project. I think they added an amendment or so for moving forward. The Plan Commission is next. How do you see the progress of this facility now that we're actually seeing some, not blueprints, it's too early for that, but we're seeing some designs?
Well, it's never fast enough for me, but there we have a terrific crew that's working very hard. It always takes a little time you got a big building and you're replacing it. You have to think of how you're going to bring it down, how you're going to replace it, how you're going to design it. We have processes and public input on all of those steps, and we're in the middle of that. I do think this 4th Street Garage is a very important downtown anchor to help people who access downtown, whether it's for a play or a concert or job or your daily commute. Or church on Sunday. It's all important, and I hope we will be able to, it looks like we are on target to be able to replace it and open it in 2020. That's kind of the goal, and there's a lot of work to be done, but that's where we're aiming.
Do you see that's meeting the needs of the community, but yet still staying green, which was part of the city council?
Absolutely. Problem. I mean, this is going to be the greenest garage we've ever had. It's going to have solar on the top. It's going to have a bunch of solar plug-in spots for solar cars in it. It's going to be designed in other green ways. It's going to have a lot of bike parking. It's going to have actually two public restrooms, which have been something we've been also recommended from some task forces, and we're going to be able to do that. So it's going to be the greenest garage we've ever seen in Bloomington.
Retail space on the ground floor, but this is a city-owned building. So will the city be managing that retail space?
Well, we have garages that have retail space in them now. And as you know, our code, our plan, comprehensive plan and our code both urge in strong ways that streetscape in the downtown particularly have retail to keep an activated street. So if we're an owner of a building, we're subject to those same rules. So we will be designing this garage with significant retail space, particularly on the Walnut Street frontage. Exactly how we'll manage it, I don't know. We're not generally a retail manager, but we comply with the same rules that everybody else does for that kind of physical space.
I wanted to ask about the property that's directly south right now. There is an eminent domain process kind of moving forward. The realtor that owns that doesn't want to give it up to the city. So how does the city move forward designing a garage but not knowing yet where it's going with it?
Yeah. I mean, I've not had to use eminent domain before. This is the first time. Cities obviously do this when you're doing public works projects and significant public projects. We've done it in Bloomington quite a number of times. I'm hopeful that we can work this out with the landowner. The person who bought the building only has owned it for a year or two, not very long. They bought it as a commercial property, and my expectation is we'll be able to work something out with them. But I do think it's also important that the city, the reason we have eminent domain authority is because if we're doing a major public-oriented building, we need to be able to get it done where it needs to be done, and having that access all the way down to 3rd Street means we can have a much more efficient garage. The public cost per space will be lower. We're able to do more that the public interest sees and wants there. So I'm hoping we'll be able to work it out, but in case we can't, we have begun the eminent domain process, which lets a city say, hey, this is needed for public purposes. We're going to pay you whatever your property's worth. We don't decide that number. There's a whole judicial process to pick the fair value, which we will pay for that property.
So is that the next step? Or I guess what's happening right now in that?
Well, it's kind of parallel process. You have the eminent domain process, which is a court process, which ultimately, if the landowner just simply refuses to sell, the city has the right under eminent domain to take possession and to pay the person, and the judge and a court process say, well, how much do you owe them? And that process is underway. But we also, as more typically, we negotiate with that person and say, hey, here's an offer. Will you sell it to us voluntarily for this much? And we hope to conclude that successfully, but we'll see.
And then I just want to get your reaction from the property owner who we talked to. He said, well, it's not a public interest because the garage can just build up.
Well, the interest is that we want to have an efficient garage, and having a garage that covers that footprint lets us be more efficient, spend less money per space, get the size garage that we need, and absolutely pay him fair value for that property. But a public garage is a pretty classic, traditional need for a public asset downtown.
All right, before we go, we had a few questions from listeners and viewers who emailed or Facebooked in. Tyler wants to know about the security cameras in Switchyard Park. I'm not sure where he heard about, maybe in one of the recent reports we've done. How many, what are they used for, and how does the city balance that need for security cameras for security reasons, but then yet some of the public that feel like,
yeah,
oh, Big Brother is watching.
No, I hear you.
Yeah.
I feel this is... First of all, there's no decision that's been made, and any decision that gets made about that will go through the Parks Board, which is a public process, and that they are responsible to oversee all our parks and hear and weigh all of those things. Now, I will say that one of the things in the planning for Switchyard Park, which happened before I became mayor, but one of the very conspicuous points that the public made was, we want to make sure this new park is very safe. We're concerned and want to make sure that everybody who's here, it's a long linear park. There's not as many sight lines and such as in a kind of more rectangular park like Bryant Park, for example. So I think the park planners have really listened to that from the public. The ultimate balance is going to be decided by the Parks Board. I'm very sensitive to both of those concerns. We want our parks to be safe, but we also don't want to live in a surveillance society. Any cameras that are in there will not be, they're not monitored, nobody's watching live what's happening. They're really there to review something if it were to happen. Could go back and pull the tape and look at what happened. That's an old phrase, pull the tape, but go back and look at what happened. I think it's a good debate for the public to have about this. Most of our parks do not have cameras. We have a couple parks with one or two cameras in them, again, for safety, essentially. Ultimately, the most important thing about safety in parks is having people there, lots of people. So everybody come to Switchyard Park when it opens in November.
We had someone on Facebook wanted to know about the gas station that was being built on the corner of Tap Road Country Club and that'd be Rogers by the golf course. It seems like it stopped the last 2 months. Do you have any information on that?
You know, I don't. It's not inside city limits. That southeast corner, I think they're talking about it at Tap and Country Club and Rogers, is in the county. I have seen there is new construction there. I didn't think it was a gas station, but I'm not positive. But we can try to get the information, but it's basically a county-zoned project.
Okay, and Leanne emails in and wants to know about the B-Link Trail Connect to Switchyard Park. Will there be a crosswalk or for pedestrians to have to cross a busy, and I think we've asked this before, it's been a while now, but maybe some new information on how to get across Walnut.
Well, so first, I'm glad you asked about the B-Link. That's an exciting trail. I hope you all enjoy that and try that out. It runs from Henderson west over to Walnut. And that's right, that really takes you to the entrance to Switchyard Park. So that crossing of the street is very important. We're looking at that, exactly how that will be designed, but we're very sensitive to the importance of being able to cross there for all the folks that may have a Hawkeye kind of flashing light to get across Walnut. And that will be a main entrance on the east side of Switchyard Park coming off of Walnut there. So look forward to that. Again, we'll be cutting the ribbon on Switchyard in November, so look to that. And we definitely are very aware of the importance of that B-Link to bring people into Switchyard too.
Senior Center opens Tuesday, grand opening on Thursday. What kind of feedback, although I know it's very early, but is this something that you're getting a lot of feedback on?
Yes, everyone come down to College Mall. This is a pilot program we're doing to welcome seniors to identify whether this is the kind of thing that they'll enjoy. We're doing this with Area 10 Area Agency entity plus in IU Health together, the three of us, the city. And I think it's next to Macy's inside College Mall. And again, it does open this week, grand opening on Thursday, if you want to come down and check it out. And let's see if it's something that people enjoy. If it is, we'll keep doing it.
That's all I had. Is there anything you'd like to announce or that you'd like to say before we go?
Well, I might also invite everybody to Bryan Park for Juneteenth. That's Wednesday, June 19th, is a city celebration of that historic celebration of the end of the Civil War and freedom. So come on down to Bryan Park late afternoon, early evening on Juneteenth, and we'll see you there.